everybody. Come on, your story hour's on.
Welcome to your story hour. I'm Aunt Nikki.
And I'm Uncle John, and we're here to bring you today's
inspiring story.
I'm feeling in a mood for jokes today, Aunt Nikki.
Oh, you are you? I'm game, Uncle John. What have you got for me?
What sea creatures make good carpenters?
I think I have a pretty good idea about what sea creature might make a good carpenter. Would it be a hammerhead shark?
You got it, Aunt Nikki. Hammerhead shark is the right answer. And what about, how do you make an octopus laugh?
I can't say I've ever made an octopus laugh, so I don't know. You've stumped me on this one, Uncle John.
Well, this is what you need to make an octopus laugh. 10 tickles.
10 tickles? Oh, I got it. 10 tickles.
You got it.
So what got you thinking about sea creatures like sharks and octopuses?
I guess it's because much of today's story takes place in the ocean.
Oh?
The deep sea is a foreign place to most of us landlubbers. Much of what we know about the ocean comes from those brave explorers who don scuba gear and sink down into the depths to film the wonders there.
That's true.
The main character of our story not only invented the scuba gear that is used by deep sea divers, he and his friends also developed a camera system for filming underwater.
A pretty impressive feat.
I thought you'd be interested. So let's hop aboard with Aunt Carol as she tells us the story of the Sea Musketeers.
Jacques Cousteau was born on June 11, 1910, a time when adventurers were racing to reach the South Pole. Jacques, however, went on no adventures. While other French boys his age were climbing trees and having fun out of doors, Jacques could only watch through his window. You see, Jacques was sickly and weak with anemia, and his parents kept him indoors.
Mama, I want to play outside with Pierre.
Jacques, you know it's not healthy for you to run around with your brother. Here, why don't you read a pirate story instead?
All right.
Jacques might have been confined inside for the rest of his childhood if his father hadn't started working for Mr. Higgins, a wealthy American businessman who believed in the power of fresh air and exercise.
Daniel, what your boy needs isn't to be cooped up all day. Let me teach him to swim.
Mama! Papa! Look at me!
Very good, Jacques.
He's sure taken to water like a fish.
I told you, all your boy needs is fresh air and exercise.
Jacques loves swimming. And as he grew older, he also developed a love of mechanical engineering.
Here, Jacques. I brought you a copy of the magazine Popular Mechanics. Thought it might interest you.
Thank you, Papa. Here's some detailed plans on how to build a crane. I want to make one.
Jacques went to work making a model of the crane featured in the magazine. When he was finished, the crane was as tall as he was. It was fully functioning with pulleys and cranks that allowed the crane to turn around and move forward and backward. Shortly afterward, he started a new hobby.
This article about movie cameras is so interesting. If I save up my allowance, I can buy one to play with.
Young man, are you sure you'd like this hand crank movie camera?
Yes, sir.
You see, it's very expensive.
Yes, I know, sir. That's why I've been saving my money for 3 whole months.
Well then, here you go.
The moment Jacques got home, he immediately set about taking the camera completely apart.
I see. The film runs through here.
He took note of all the pieces and how they fit, and then put the camera back together again. From that day onward, Jacques started filming the world around him. When he was 14, he recorded his first full-length film, a movie of his cousin's wedding. That same year, Jacques entered military school and formed a film production company with his friends. The years flew by in a happy flurry of filmmaking, and before he knew it, Jacques Cousteau was attending the French Naval Academy. During his year-long training cruise, Lieutenant Cousteau recorded movies of the exotic sites in Bali, Vietnam, and California. When he returned, he showed the movies to his family.
What a fascinating movie! Who are those men?
Those are Japanese pearl divers.
Look at our Jacques. All grown up and traveling the world. Where are you going next?
Actually, I want to become a pilot.
Jacques entered the pilot program and did well in his studies. He looked forward to a new career in flying airplanes. But just before his final exams, he suffered a terrible blow. Jacques had borrowed his father's sports car to drive to a friend's wedding in the mountains. The road was steep and curvy, and night had already fallen. As Jacques was approaching a sharp hairpin curve, the headlights on his car suddenly went out.
Oh no! I can't see anything!
When Jacques came to, the first thing he noticed was that his car was flipped over. He was bleeding heavily and could tell that something was very wrong with his arms. He couldn't move them.
Monsieur Cousteau, you are very lucky to be alive.
What's the verdict, Doc? Can you fix me?
You have several cracked ribs, a crushed lung, and both of your arms are broken. The left one in 5 places.
But I'll get better. Right, Doc?
With severe injuries like this, you can never be certain. Well, Jacques, your arm is badly infected. We may have to amputate it.
No! You can't amputate my arm. I'm a pilot. I need my hands to fly.
Well, then, we'll try our best to save your life without amputating your arm, but, my boy, I'm afraid your days as a pilot are over.
Jacques' dreams of becoming a pilot were shattered, just like his broken arms. Though he convinced the doctor not to amputate his left arm, it lay limply by his side, paralyzed. Even after 8 months of physical therapy, he could barely move his fingers. During this time of recovery, the Navy stationed him in Toulon, a town on the southern coast of France. There, he became fast friends with Philippe, a fellow officer.
Jacques, my friend, tomorrow you should go swimming in the ocean with me. I think it would help strengthen your arm.
All right, Philippe. I'll meet you there. This is glorious!
I knew you'd like it, my friend!
Oh, you're right, Philippe. Swimming helped me as a little boy. I shouldn't be surprised that it would help me again.
Well, while you exercise, I am going to spearfish.
And what's all your gear?
To swim underwater successfully, you need to move like a fish. That's what I want to be, a manfish. So, I use these fins on my feet. They're made from metal saw blades and rubber. And I wear goggles over my eyes so I can see underwater. And this sawed-off piece of garden hose is a snorkel that lets me breathe. See?
You're a genius, my friend. Someday I'm going to join you. Fins, goggles, and all.
Jacques faithfully swam in the ocean with Philippe every day, and his arms began to steadily improve. Though one of his arms would remain slightly twisted for the rest of his life, he began to feel normal again. One evening, he was visiting his parents in Paris and making a movie of the party they were attending.
Hello, monsieur. My name is Simone. I noticed you here in the corner with a movie camera.
Ah, yes. I enjoy filming events along my travels. I'm Jacques Cousteau.
Travels? Have you traveled much, Jacques?
Yes, during a tour in the Navy. We went to Cambodia, Japan.
Oh, I lived in Japan for a few years when I was little. My father's an admiral, you see. Where do your travels take you now?
Well, mostly the ocean. My friend Philippe and I swim every day. And he introduced me to the most amazing invention, goggles. You never guess at all the colors and shapes of the ocean life. Schools of blue and orange fish. It's so beautiful. I dream of capturing it all on film.
I'd love for you to show me the ocean, Jacques.
Then I promise to take you someday.
True to his promise, Jacques shared the beauty of the underwater world with Simone. He traveled to Paris to visit her whenever he could, and she, in turn, visited him in Toulon. The two fell in love and were married on July 12, 1937. As a couple, they continued to join Philippe at the ocean, and soon, A new face joined their crew.
Jacques, Simone, I'd like you to meet Didi. He's a spearfisher like me.
How do you do, Didi?
Nice to meet you, madame. Philippe here is a right manfish and invited me to explore the ocean with you all.
I think you may be the manfish. You can hold your breath and dive down 20 meters deep.
Impressive.
Not only that, but one day he speared 280 pounds of fish in just 2 hours.
Well, I'm impressed with all three of you men. You are like the three musketeers.
You mean the sea musketeers?
Most certainly.
Yes, we shall be the sea musketeers. And you, Simone, shall be our honorary member.
The main goal of the sea musketeers was to explore the ocean. And Jacques was always looking for ways to improve their equipment so they could go deeper and stay underwater longer.
Jacques, what are you doing?
We're always cold when we dive, and I thought maybe covering my body in grease would keep me warmer. I'm even colder with the grease. Next time, let's try wearing rubber suits.
It'll be impossible for you to dive to any depth in that rubber suit. You're floating on the waves like a buoy.
Do you think wearing a belt with weights fastened to it would help me sink?
I don't know, but I'm sure you'll find out.
The biggest problem the sea musketeers faced was how to breathe underwater. In those days, divers wore a metal contraption called the atmospheric diving suit. Its air hose was attached to a pump above water, so divers could only go as far as the hose was long. The suit did allow divers to stay underwater for hours at a time and was useful for building ships and repairing bridges, but it was very impractical for someone who wanted to explore the nooks and crannies of the ocean floor. Jacques decided to design his own air supply system. He got one of the men on his Navy ship to build him an air tank and then filled it with pure oxygen. Then he used a bit of rubber tubing to connect the air tank to his mask. All that remained was to test it out.
All right, my fellow sea musketeers. You stay here in the boat and make sure that nothing goes wrong while I descend.
If it goes badly, I can dive deep to rescue you. Just remember, my limit is 20 meters.
Jacques' friends watched as he slowly sank under the waves. They knew the dangers he faced. As a diver goes deeper, nitrogen gases build up in his body. A diver must be careful to ascend to the surface slowly, allowing his body to release the nitrogen trapped in his bloodstream. Otherwise, he faces crippling pain, and sometimes even death. Jacques appeared to be doing well at first, but around 15 meters down, his spine cramped and he bent backwards. Quickly, he took off the belt of weights he was wearing so that it would be possible for him to rise to the surface. And then he passed out.
Oh no, Uncle John. That sounds scary.
Yes, it does, Aunt Nikki. But Jacques' desire to explore the ocean was so strong that he was willing to take risks.
Because reaching the goal would make the struggle worthwhile.
Exactly. You know, girls and boys, your Story Hour has a number of stories about brave adventurers. People like David Livingstone, who explored deep into Africa, and Matthew Henson, who helped lead expeditions to the North Pole.
There's also the Wright brothers, who explored the world of aviation.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the world of science. Alexander Fleming and his discoveries with penicillin.
Marie Curie and her discoveries with radium.
The list of stories could go on and on. However, it's about time that we get back to Jacques Cousteau and our story for today called The Sea Musketeers.
Jacques Cousteau survived his brush with death and was more determined than ever to explore the ocean and bring its beauty to people who couldn't visit the watery wonderland themselves. One of the problems he needed to solve was how to keep a camera dry under the water. Jacques came up with an interesting solution.
If I seal the camera in this fruit jar, it shouldn't get wet.
Jacques tested his camera in 1938. He dove 6 meters underwater, turned the camera upward, and filmed Simone splashing on the surface. Then they rushed home and developed the film in a darkroom he created in their bathroom. joy of joys, the underwater camera worked. Their joy increased later that year when Jean-Michel was born. 2 years later, their family grew again with the birth of Philippe. This happy event was overshadowed, however, with World War II and Germany invading France. Jacques started using his underwater skills to assist the Navy. Recording the enemy's underwater movements can be very useful during wartime. A friend of Jacques ground a new camera lens, and another friend built a better watertight case. It had handles and could be maneuvered easily underwater. Jacques also worked to create lightweight batteries that could be used with portable lights to make it bright enough to film in the ocean depths. But a new problem arose. Movie film couldn't be obtained during wartime. So he and Simone stayed up all night in their darkroom, splicing together negatives made for a still camera to make the film usable for movies. Finally, they could use their new camera. In 1942, Jacques and Didi were ready to begin a filming adventure.
Ugh, this camera weighs 20 pounds. I'm glad it doesn't seem this heavy when we're in the water. You ready to catch a fish, Sea Musketeer?
I'm ready. Remember, take a deep breath. You'll have to stay underwater as long as me.
Right with you.
Jacques' film of Didi spearfishing was a success. But he knew that to make better films, he'd need to be able to breathe underwater for extended periods of time without being tethered to a boat. His previous experiments with a tank of pure oxygen had come to a painful end. However, other divers were successfully experimenting with tanks of compressed air. The biggest issue was how to turn the air on and off to conserve it as long as possible. The current trend was a valve which could be opened and closed by hand, but it wasted a lot of air during this process, and the tank would quickly run out. Jacques thought long and hard about this problem and designed a mouthpiece that could regulate air delivery instead. The best feature of the mouthpiece was that it would allow him to exhale air bubbles so that toxic nitrogen wouldn't stay trapped in his body.
Jacques, your idea is perfect. It means you would be able to dive without worrying about poisoning yourself.
Wouldn't it be amazing, my dear?
Yes. Now we just need to get someone to make it for you.
So you have a project for an engineer?
Yes, sir. Do you think you could make me something like this?
The valve would release air when you inhale?
Yes. It would be controlled by the tongue's natural movement during breathing.
Well, this looks similar to a regulator I'm working on for cars. For a diving apparatus, we'd need the exhaust and intake to be in the same area. Right about here. But I think it just might work.
Excellent. We'll call it the Aqualung.
Jacques Cousteau and the French engineer Emile Gagnon went through several versions before they perfected the Aqualung. Eventually, they designed a device that could make the pressure of compressed air match the pressure of the water at any depth. Then Jacques waited anxiously while the Aqualung was being manufactured.
Just arrived from Paris.
It must be the Aqualung. Christmas has arrived in June this year.
It is the Aqualung. I'll round up the Sea Musketeers so we can test it out.
Here, this cove should do. Safely hidden from the enemy troops. Don't want them knowing we might have a way to breathe underwater.
For sure. Their navy would make great use of this skill.
All right. Strap me in.
There you go. Three cylinders of compressed air fastened securely on your back. And here's your weighted belt, so you won't just float.
Thank you. How do I look?
With your flippers and diving mask, I'd say you look like a professional manfish. One who's ready to breathe while exploring the Mediterranean floor.
The Sea Musketeers watched as Jacques waded into the ocean and sank under the waves. He took a deep breath and exhaled a stream of bubbles as he swam to the bottom. Simone, wearing goggles, snorkeled above him to make sure that everything went smoothly. If Jacques showed the slightest sign of distress, she would signal Didi, who would dive down and rescue her husband. No sign of distress came, though, as Jacques experimented swimming in loops, somersaults, and barrel rolls. The aqualung worked like a dream. For more than half an hour, Jacques explored the underwater world, finally emerging with enough seafood for everyone to feast on that evening.
This is delicious.
Mm-hmm. Brought to you by the Aqualung. And of course, my wife's excellent cooking.
You're very welcome. So, Sea Musketeers, what plans do you have for the Aqualung now?
I've ordered two more of them. So soon, we can all dive together.
That summer, the Sea Musketeers went on 500 dives, and Didi reached a depth of 64 meters, more than three times deeper than he had been able to dive without the Aqualung. Throughout their dives, Jacques worked to update the Aqualung to make it more efficient. He also spent hours creating a movie which he aptly titled Shipwrecks, since they had been the focus of his work. It won Best Short in the Cannes Film Festival. Even better, France was liberated the following year, and in 1945, World War II was officially over. With the military's focus shifting, the Sea Musketeers were broken up. Captain Jacques Cousteau was assigned a desk job with the Navy, and Philippe became a forest ranger. But Jacques believed he would be much more useful as a diver and arranged for an admiral to get a special screening of Shipwrecks.
What an excellent film, Captain Cousteau.
And I'm sure, Admiral, you could see how useful the Aqualung would be to the Navy. Why, my team could even search underwater for mines left after the occupation, so they wouldn't be triggered by unsuspecting ships.
Ah, yes, I see. I hereby assign you to be the head of a new office, the Undersea Research Group.
Thank you, Admiral. I shall require the services of my fellow diver, Philippe, who has been reassigned inland.
Whatever you need.
With the Admiral's blessing, the Sea Musketeers were back in business, this time as the Undersea Research Group. Jacques and his crew began the dangerous process of locating mines off the French coast.
Now, men, the mines you'll be looking for are large steel balls with metal spikes coming out of them, like this. They'll be attached to the ocean floor by a cable, remember. Don't approach the mines. We don't want to accidentally set off an explosion that could sink a battleship. Oh. We will be careful. We will be brave. And we will save our precious seas!
In addition to clearing the ocean of mines, the Undersea Research Group explored and filmed the abundant ocean life. Within several years, they had expanded from a one-room office to a three-story building with a machine shop, photography lab, and research laboratories. They longed to explore the seas beyond the purview of the Navy, but that would require getting a ship of their very own. How could they possibly afford it? The answer came in the form of a wealthy Irish politician.
I will purchase this lovely ship and charge you only 1 franc a year for its usage on 2 conditions.
Yes, sir.
Never tell anyone that I paid for her.
All right. And the other condition?
Never ask me for another dime again.
I give you my word.
The Calypso, Jacques' new ship, needed a lot of work to be outfitted for the Undersea Research Group. In addition to time, the project would require lots of money.
I just don't know how we're going to pay for everything.
Here, Jacques. We can sell my jewels.
But Simone...
We'll basically be living on the Calypso, and I'll have no need for them. We can sell my fur coats, too.
Funds from the sale of Simone's jackets and jewels were used to purchase a new compass and gyroscope. They also outfitted the Calypso with a diving deck, observation tower, and underwater portholes where a film crew could capture ocean footage without leaving the ship. On November 24, 1951, the Calypso set out on its first mission, exploring the coral reefs of the Red Sea. The team used a sonar system to locate sunken ships and underwater formations. Then they got to work. Divers collected seawater, plant life, and creatures to be analyzed and cataloged by scientists. And photographers filmed wonders of the ocean world that had never been seen before. Their expedition was a success, and the Undersea Research Group was ready for their next adventure.
Did you find any treasure in the shipwreck?
Yes, I think so. Take a look at these dolphins. They look pretty old, don't they?
Yes. You should have them examined by an archaeologist.
Captain Cousteau, I'm so glad you brought these goblets by the museum. They hail from ancient Rome, from the 3rd century BC.
Jacques had indeed found treasure, and his team worked tirelessly, making more than 3,000 dives and collecting more than 10,000 artifacts that had been buried underwater for 2,000 years. This success inspired Jacques to explore even more, and he rebuilt his underwater cameras to be even better at capturing the beauty of the seas. The team on the Calypso filmed and dove with porpoises, sharks, whales, sea turtles, and everyone's favorite, a spotted fish as long as a man's arm with a protruding lower lip.
Did you get a movie of me swimming with the giant gray grouper?
Yes, he looked to be at least 80 pounds.
Oh, but so friendly. All I had to do was give him a bit of meat, and he was happy to twirl through the water with me.
You and your fishy friend looked like you were dancing the waltz.
Ulysses the grouper is the world's first underwater ballroom dancer.
Ulysses was very friendly with all of the divers. In fact, he was so friendly that he repeatedly bumped into their equipment, photobombed underwater scenes, and became something of a pest. Eventually, he had to be trapped in a cage so that the team could capture footage for The Silent World, the first full-length underwater movie in color. The film won the Academy Award for Best Documentary in 1956. Around this time, Cousteau started writing articles for National Geographic and became director of the Oceanographic Institute in Monaco. He also designed the diving saucer, a miniature yellow two-man submarine that would take a scientist 900 meters under the surface of the ocean for the very first time. And in 1958, when Jacques Cousteau sailed the Calypso to the International Oceanographic Congress in New York, he was welcomed by a chorus of tugboats and fireboats in the harbor.
It's Jacques Cousteau!
It's no wonder people were cheering for Jacques Cousteau, Uncle John. He accomplished so much in his lifetime.
That's true, Aunt Nikki. In fact, we haven't even talked about some of his greatest adventures.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Boys and girls, join us next time to hear the second part of his story. I'm sure you'll find it just as inspiring.
It's almost time to go, but I'd like to take a moment to thank all of the caring adults who send donations so that we can share stories like this about inspiring men and women who make a difference in the world. Your generosity makes our program possible.
Mm-hmm. If you're listening right now and would like to support our program, we invite you to give online at yourstoryhour.org, or you can call our office at 800-987-7879.
Thank you very much. We love you.
Goodbye.